And now, the BC Food and Wine Radio Network presents Anthony Gismondi and BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to today's show. Welcome to the fall, one of the best times to travel in British Columbia. And we have some ideas for you a bit later in the show. It's been a super busy summer here, and we never actually got around to sharing some big news about the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. We are the only radio show in Canada now that partners with three of the nation's biggest radio companies, and we're heard in over 30 cities across the province. We're really pleased to continue here in downtown Vancouver with our studios at Bell Media. Plus, we're coming up on our eighth year of airing in the same time slot on CFAX in Victoria. Our partnership with Stingray Radio continues with the show airing on Radio NL Kamloops, where we're closing in on the eight-year mark. But the big news is our new partnership with Vista Radio and their many local stations across the province. All the cities you've heard us on have segued to the Vista radio stations in those markets. Plus, we have an exciting new addition on Vancouver Island is Vista's 89.7 Sun FM in Duncan, where the show now airs on Sundays at 6 p.m. Interestingly, you can hear the station's radio signal on the Sunshine Coast as well. It booms right across the water, and you can hear 89.7 like a local radio station in Vancouver and the suburbs. That's at 6 p.m. Sundays on 89.7 Sun FM. And speaking of the island, we're really excited to be heading to Unsworth Vineyards for an on-location there on Wednesday, October 1st. If you didn't know, Unsworth's undergone what I believe is a $15 million renovation, so we're going to drop by and check out all the exciting new facilities, talk to everybody involved. Should be a great show and a great spotlight on Vancouver Island wines. Now, on today's show, our neighbors at the Fairmont Hotel Vancouver, just up the street from our downtown Vancouver studios, join us to update, many special events they have planned and why this is such a great time to plan a staycation in downtown Vancouver. We head to the Naramata Bench to catch up with Sandy Lyer. She's the winemaker at Laughingstock Vineyards, winner of the Best Performing Small Winery at the 2025 WineAlign National Wine Awards. We're going to go through some of the winning wines with Sandy and discuss, maybe we'll get some information about why her wines are performing so well on the Naramata Bench. But up next, I'm really excited to take us to Champagne. We're going to speak to an expat Canadian, Raymond Rangeval, who left the country at 10 years of age and is now the global commercial director at Champagne Palmer. He connects with us to talk about their signature blend, the multi-vintage Champagne Palmer Brut Reserve, as well as to take on a discussion about all of the latest things going on in Champagne, you know, with climate change. Some of the traditional European vineyards have been suffering or have been needed to change. So we're going to talk about what's going on in Champagne and how they're attempting to keep their high quality of sparkling wine coming year after year by adjusting to climate change. All that and more coming up on the show. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and we are set to go.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Experience what makes the Okanagan great with a visit to Liber Estates. 100% Canadian owned, featuring boutique wines made from exceptional terroir with 100% BC grapes. You'll find them right on Highway 97, just north of Osoyoos, where you can sample and discover their latest offerings in their tasting garden and their wine shop. Or visit them at liberestates.com. Liber Estates, simply great wine.
People always ask us, how do you taste? What we don't do is taste one wine in isolation. We choose a grape or a style of wine, then we taste a number of samples from around the world, so we're constantly benchmarking the quality of, say, BC Chardonnay versus Burgundy, the Sonoma Coast, Argentina, or New Zealand. That way we get a better picture of where that wine sits globally, and our readers often benefit from getting more wine for less money. I'm Anthony Gismondi. Why not compare wines with us at GismondiOnWine.com.
Now, back to BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi. Because the players gonna play, 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 play. And the haters gonna hate, 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 baby. I'm just gonna shake, 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 shake.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to the show. Joining us off the top from Champagne, France today is Raymond Hangeval. He's the Global Commercial Director at Champagne Palmer. Raymond, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Hello, Anthony. It's also a pleasure to be with you today. Thank you for welcoming me.
Oh, wow. We love to talk to people from Champagne, mostly because we like to drink champagne.
Don't we all? Yes, it's a real pleasure.
Yeah. Okay, so I thought we'd start, or maybe you could start with a bit about Chateau Palmer, about Champagne Palmer, because I think, you know, it's a name that people maybe know a little bit about, but not a lot. So what can you tell us about Palmer in Champagne?
Definitely. So Champagne Palmer is one of the very fine wine houses of Champagne. We are known for excellence. Since the foundation of the house, the idea was to make a great wine. We have an amazing history and foundation. The house was founded back in 1947 by seven families of growers who were all owners of prestigious Grand Cru and Premier Cru vineyards, so the very best terroirs, the very best vineyards in Champagne.
Right.
And in a very specific region, which is a region called La Montagne de Reims, the Mountain of Reims. So it's the most northern, I would say, area in Champagne.
Right.
And it's a region, it's one of the main sub-regions in Champagne that is mainly known for one grape variety, which is Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
I would say it's really the terroir of Pinot Noir. It's the Pinot Noir kingdom in Champagne.
Yeah.
All the great Grand Cru, Premier Cru vineyards, the best Pinot Noir vineyards are in the Montagne de Reims, which is really the terroir of expertise of Champagne Palmer and has been since the foundation of the house.
Yeah.
That being said, and that's when it gets very interesting, Champagne Palmer, even though we are a house known for our Montagne de Reims expertise for this specific terroir, the main grape variety on our wines, in our blends, is actually Chardonnay. It's not Pinot Noir. And so that, what kind of makes Champagne Palmer in amongst the fine wine houses of Champagne, it makes us really stand out from the crowd, because you would expect us to have more Pinot on our wines, but it's actually Chardonnay that is driving the Palmer style, I would say.
You have more precision, I think. You touched on it earlier, so let's talk just a little bit about that. So you're further north. We know that everybody's challenged by climate change and these periodic chaotic episodes. So being in the north in the cooler area, is that something that's a big plus now for Champagne Palmer?
Yeah, it's definitely, Anthony, a real advantage for us. You are right. It more than ever today. Being in the Montagne de Reims is a blessing. It's a privilege. It's an advantage for us facing climate change. We are all facing it, and not just in Champagne. I mean, all around the world, and it's a challenge. You know, in a wine region like Champagne, where freshness, acidity, structure is very important to make a great wine.
Yeah.
We warmer vintages, it is now becoming gradually more and more of a challenge to keep the level of structure, of acidity and freshness that we had 20 years ago.
So, sure.
And so being in the Montagne de Reims, indeed, we are the advantage we have at Champagne Palmer. We have quite a substantial vineyard. We have over 200 hectares of Grand Cru and Premier Cru vineyards today in the north of the Montagne de Reims. So our vineyards are facing towards the north.
Yep.
Towards the north, which indeed we have less less of that, I would say, warm vintage effect that we've had these past years, where we have a cooler microclimate in the Montagne de Reims, which enables us even in warm vintages to retain quite great freshness and acidity that is essential to make great wines in Champagne.
Yeah, the key,
and
actually,
I would say.
Yeah.
Yes,
go ahead.
The key, definitely, and to continue on that, what puts us in even a greater position today is that first point that I highlighted about the uniqueness of Champagne-Palmer, thanks to our the majority of Chardonnay in our wines, because Montagne de Reims is a region which is like an ocean of Pinot Noir, but in that ocean of Pinot Noir, there happens to be this wonderful island of Chardonnay on the east side of the Montagne de Reims. It's an area, it's a small island that is called, referred to in Champagne as the white pearls of the Montagne de Reims,
uh-huh.
les perles blanches. And so in this area, you have two premier cru villages, which are historic and emblematic for Champagne-Palmer, which are really the essence of the Palmer style today, the backbone, I would say. It's two premier cru villages called Villers-Marmerie and Trépaille, very famous for Chardonnay. Now, Chardonnay is really the grape there, and we are the number one producer in that specific area, which therefore means that is why Chardonnay is so important in the Palmer recipe, because we have today just over 80 hectares, so that's about 200 acres of prime Chardonnay in that white pearl area of the east of the Montagne de Reims.
My guest is Raymond Rangeval. He's the global commercial director at Champagne-Palmer. Raymond, let's talk about the style. A lot of people here, you know, they talk about the style of Bollinger or Tattenjay. How would you characterize the style? Then we've talked a bit about the Chardonnay. What is the brand that you are talking about most, or the style you're talking about most at Palmer?
What we do at Palmer, we highlight the excellence of these very noble terroirs of the Montagne de Reims. They are exceptional Grand Cru and Premier Cru vineyards, so we are fortunate to have these.
Yep.
So then, of course, it's craftsmanship, the art of blending, and our goal, our permanent quest, is, of course, precision in our winemaking, excellence, and, of course, great taste. And when I say that, Anthony, I mean that what we want to deliver is immediate pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
The style of Palmer, I would say, to describe the style that you can expect from La Réserve, which is being introduced in the BC market,
right,
is a very, I would say, clean, crisp, fresh, elegant style that is very pleasant on the palate, that is refreshing, that calls for a second sip in a second glass very easily, you know, that very drinkable, easy-to-drink champagne.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's also a great wine with substance, with depth, with structure. So it's really, I would say, a very classic, universal champagne style that appeal to everyone.
Yeah.
Both people who are not necessarily regular wine drinkers, who just want a really nice, elegant glass of champagne, but also the wine lovers who have tasted many great wines, they will feel that structure and excellence and depth in the Palmer expression.
Yeah. We should remind our listeners that we're talking about La Réserve. This is a blend of roughly 50% Chardonnay and then 30 to 35 Pinot Noir and 20 to 25 Meunier. So it's a classic blend.
Correct.
With not very much dosage, like probably less than 5 or 6 grams per liter. So it's basically dry, very elegant, a lot of precision in this wine.
Absolutely. And yes, it's a classic blend. However, I must highlight one fact, is that the percentage of Chardonnay is always between 50 and 55%, so always at least half of the blend. And that is very unusual in Champagne. It's very rare.
It is.
And what's more, it's not your usual Chardonnay from Côte des Blancs, which is another sub-region in Champagne
True.
That is the most famous for Chardonnay. But the Chardonnay we have in those white pearls is outstanding at the highest level in Champagne, but it offers a lot more minerality and citrus character.
Yeah.
So a very clean aperitif style Champagne. But you did mention one thing, La Réserve. That name is to highlight the importance of what we call reserve wines.
Yep.
Because we do have a percentage of between 30 and 40% reserve wines in the blend of La Réserve. Those are wines from the past that we keep and that are included in each new blend in order to maintain the style consistent.
Yeah.
And we have a very unique approach at Palmer for reserve wines. We keep actually the finished blend of La Réserve, including the reserve wines. Each year we keep a tank of that blend to be fed into the future blends. So your La Réserve of each year is going to include 30 to 40% of those wines from the past, which are actually usually the four blends of La Réserve preceding the base harvest. So almost like a perpetual reserve, a Solera concept.
Yes.
Taking us far back in time.
Yeah, and adding that complexity. Before we run out of time, so that wine, by the way, is on the lees, sitting in the bottle for what, 36 or 48 months? So how do we...
Between 36 and 48, exactly. Actually,
yeah.
Between 3 and 4 years, which is very extensive, Anthony, because the minimum required by law in Champagne for what we call a non-vintage brut is 15 months. 15 months of aging, not even on the lees. I mean, between bottling and shipment of the wine from the cellars, it's 15 months. Well, I could say that the average in Champagne of aging on the lees would be around 2 years today, so 24 months. And at Palmer, our La Réserve signature non-vintage brut, the signature style of the house, ages at least 36 to 48 months, which really adds an extra layer of complexity, and I would say really adds that very savory element to the wine. Notes of pastry, I would say, fresh baked bread, marzipan, croissant, butter, French pâtisserie style.
Yeah, I like to say that it smells like an early morning bakery at one point, which I love so much.
Yes, indeed. So that is also describing the Palmer style. You have that freshness, precision, very bright, clean character, but at the same time, you have this very savory, tasty dimension that makes it really call for a next glass. Yeah.
Raymond, fantastic catch up with you. That was a wonderful discussion about the Palmer La Réserve Brut Champagne, now available in British Columbia. You'll find it in private wine shops for the moment, widely available across the province at any specialty wine store that you will shop in. Thanks for joining us today. We really enjoyed that conversation, and of course, we enjoyed our wine here in the studio.
It was a real pleasure, Anthony. Anytime, and I look forward to toasting with you in person in Vancouver as soon as possible.
Thanks so much. That was Raymond Hangeval. He's the Global Commercial Director at Champagne Palmer. Next, we head to British Columbia's Naramata Bench to catch up with Sandy Lyer. She's the winemaker at Laughingstock Vineyards, winner of the Best Performing Small Winery of the Year at the Wine Align 2025 National Wine Awards.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Whether it's relaxation or your next outdoor adventure, the Watermark Beach Resort in Osuyas is ready to help you embrace that Okanagan lifestyle. Whether it's creating unforgettable memories exploring award-winning wineries, embarking on outdoor adventures, or hosting corporate meetings or events. Not to mention the new summer menu at 15 Park Bistro for a culinary experience second to none. To find out more, visit watermarkbeachresort.com.
At Blue Grouse Winery, every bottle tells the story of Vancouver Island's unique terroir. Rooted in Cowichan Valley's volcanic soils and ocean breezes, Blue Grouse is celebrated for creating distinctive regional wines. Their newly released 2024 Pinot Gris, crafted by winemaker Stacey Horniman, is crisp, vibrant, and pairs well with BC seafood. Blue Grouse isn't your mainland wine, but your island discovery. Visit the tasting room or explore their collection at bluegrouse.ca.
Many people ask me which wines they should buy. My first question is, what do you like? Because when I know what they prefer, I can nudge them left or right to something similar, but often better at the same price. But if you don't like the wine, nothing I can say will change your mind. Taste is a personal thing, so ultimately, it's up to you to find a wine writer who aligns with your taste and start from there. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and I invite you to visit my website, gismondionwine.com, to find out if we can agree on something to drink tonight.
This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to the show. We're really pleased to be back on the Naramata bench, actually. And earlier this year, we were right here in Penticton at the 2025 Wine Line National Wine Awards. 22 judges, over 1,700 entries, 250 wineries from across Canada. And one winery in particular stood out. The best performing small winery went to Laughingstock Vineyards. And they join us today. Sandy Lyers, the winemaking winemaker at Laughingstock Vineyards. Sandy, welcome back to the show. You must be over the moon with these results.
Thank you. Yes, I am over the moon. I think this was a big surprise to me. I was not expected at all.
Really? You didn't know how good your wines were?
I had no idea how good they were.
Oh, my God. But a modest winemaker. That's fantastic. I love it.
Well, it was my first harvest at Laughingstock, and so it was a lot of unknowns, I guess.
Sure. It's a big accomplishment. Let's start with Laughingstock. Maybe some people may not know where Laughingstock is or what it's all about. How would you describe the property and where you're set up?
We are a property on Naramata Road, so just up on the bench, just past Hillside Winery, and we're about 4 acres, and we just recently replanted to Pinot Noir.
Right.
We are overlooking the lake. It's quite a small little winery, but the tasting room is just gorgeous with the stunning views of the lake and the vineyards as well.
Yeah, winery started by the Enns family way back when. How would you describe it? Is the style the same? Have you changed the style already or tweaked it or a different direction? How would you describe what you're doing there now?
I don't think so. When I came in, I knew that there's some iconic wines at Laughingstock that I didn't want to mess with.
Yeah.
Portfolio was their first wine, and they sort of carried that through, and I didn't want to change that at all. There's a lot of really long-time followers of the Portfolio. It's a great blend, so that one I did not touch. Also, the Syrah has been a real popular one for Laughingstock as well, so trying to keep the style the same on the Syrah Portfolio, and then just tweaking little things as far as oak program goes for Chardonnay. I added in a few whites because Laughingstock has been quite red heavy.
Yeah.
So we're doing a few more, two different Amphora white wines that are fully wild fermentations, and added in a white Meritage as well, which is kind of fun under the Blind Trust label. So it's a mystery blend.
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, there's so much interest in white wine now, or, you know, it's just it almost overnight flipped over.
Yeah.
Except for, I think, wine people drank a lot of white wine, but most of the population didn't. But now it's become extremely popular to drink white wine. It's fun, I think, because it changes the structure. It changes the palate of people tasting wine, even when they go back to red.
Yes,
absolutely. They look for more freshness now and more acidity. And so I like what's happening in that vein.
I think so, too.
Yeah. You won two platinums. They're impossible to win, even to win one. They're really hard to get. There's only 1% or just over 1% of all the entries get platinum. So that's a big achievement. You got two during these awards, which is amazing. And they were both great wines, too, obviously. But I always measure these platinums by how they taste 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road. Mm-hmm. And we've done really well looking at older platinums. We say, okay, they got it right, and that's a good thing for consumers to count on. So let's talk about the first one. We can talk about the Laughingstock. It's the 2022, is it not?
Yeah, that's right.
The Blind Trust?
2022 Blind Trust Red.
Which is an interesting wine, because you don't tell people what's in it.
That's right. Well, it is under the cap.
Yeah.
It says what the blend is, but we like to keep it under wraps because the blend changes every year, and part of our tasting platform at the winery is blind tasting. So when we pour a wine, we get people to taste it first and tell us what they think it is. And so the blind trust red is basically something that the winemaker gets full discretion to change the blend every year, make something new and fun. And so every year it's a bit different, but it's always kind of a fun blend and something a bit different from the last year.
It's a lovely, juicy style wine. I think that really appealed to the judges. When you're tasting a lot of big reds, having something that's juicy and balanced and, you know, bright acidity, it's really, it stands out. It's so much fun to watch them go through the first round and then come back and win again in the second round. Because you see them, there's probably about 30 or 40 wines in the running after the first round, but, you know, half of them are going to get eliminated again. So it's really, it's an anxious time. If you were there, you'd be really anxious knowing that you were in the first time. But, yes. Yeah, a lot of fun. Good wine. And, well, this is popular. People like to take off the capsule and see what's in there at home. I think it's a great idea. And what about the blend in this one? Did you have fun with it? Or
yes, it was a fun one because so we had a little bit of extra Malbec that year, and I love blending with Malbec because I think it gives a real fresh kind of pop on of the nose,
right.
A lot of fruit. And so we did this one. It's about 60% Merlot, 23% Cab Sauv, and the rest is Malbec. So it's kind of a fun blend and a lot of structure from the Cab Sauv, but still fresh.
Yeah, a lot of people discount Malbec, but it's sort of carving out a spot in BC. People are doing a pretty good job with it. I don't know how it's fared through the big freeze, but it has been showing well. This wine, by the way, what I wanted to talk about actually is the blend. Going forward, you'll change it again, or
change every year. So
you won't do that until you see what you have, or do you think about it?
Well, I typically think about it ahead of time, but it also ends up being sort of what do we end up with? What's growing well? What are we bringing in? Because it's different every year, and with the portfolio, we're basically making the blind trust the same way that we're making the portfolio, but.
Right.
Then I decide on the portfolio, and then I look at, you know, what else do we have to play with?
Yeah.
And I want it to be different from the portfolio.
My guest is Sandy Lyer. She's the winemaker at Laughing Stock. What are the sources of the red wine grapes for you then? How spread out is it?
Most of our reds, so the Pinot Noir that we make comes from OK Falls, but all of the other reds come from either Oliver or Soyuz. And so our portfolio mostly comes from a Soyuz. We've got a vineyard, Perfect Hedge, that was one of the original Laughing Stock vineyards. And then we've got a couple of others down south as well that we can pull from, like our Bull Pine and Bear Cub vineyards. So some really nice.
You get some help there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have a lot of fruit to look at, or you have a chance to look at a lot of different fruit.
Yeah, that's definitely a benefit for sure.
And you came out of the freeze pretty well with the red varieties, or how about the Syrah? I mean, the Syrah took a beating generally in the valley. Is this one surviving?
Syrah, for us, we have very little left, so the next vintage is going to be pretty small for 2025, like maybe half of what we've done in the past. And we are replanting, though, which is something that I was really happy to have support for, because I know there's going to be a lot of people that aren't going to replant Syrah just with the uncertainty with winters and damage. So,
well, let's talk about this Syrah. So this is a 2022 Syrah.
Yes.
And it's 100%.
It is co-fermented with about 4% Viognier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And why do you co-ferment it with Viognier?
Well, for a couple reasons. One, I really like the aromatics that the Viognier gives the Syrah. It really helps to lift the nose, and I like the sort of a little bit of floral characteristic in there, but also for color stability and, just for something kind of different, make it unique.
And were you a big red wine fan before you got there to make all these reds?
Or yes, I was a big red.
So you were happy to step into that role?
Yes, I definitely was.
Yeah. Well, they're two terrific wines. I think people can't go wrong. Can they buy these wines now? Or are they all gone? Or what's the situation with the Platinums?
Yeah, there's still a bit left. We've got, we're going to be flipping into our new vintage in probably a couple months for both of these. But there's still some at the wineries. But it's going to sell through pretty quickly now with these awards.
Yeah, that's such a great nose.
on the Syrah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty lifted. So with the Syrah, we also ferment with mostly whole berry, and I think that also helps to retain a lot of the aromatics inside the berries as it ferments, and it's kind of a fun one to do.
It's a nice wine, though, because it has a certain sense of elegance. Like, it's a big wine, but it's got a roundness and a silkiness to it as well, so, and it doesn't have hardly any of that sort of meaty character, so yeah. It's really a sophisticated kind of wine.
Yeah.
Northern Rhone-ish, sort of.
Yes, definitely based on the Northern Rhone.
Sandy Lyer's our guest. She's not going away. She's a winemaker at Laughing Stock Vineyard. She's not going away from there either. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about some of the gold medal winning wines and how you can get to the winery and taste some of this stuff. If you're listening to BC Food and Wine Radio, we'll be right back.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
At Blue Grouse Winery, every bottle tells the story of Vancouver Island's unique terroir. Rooted in Cowichan Valley's volcanic soils and ocean breezes, Blue Grouse is celebrated for creating distinctive regional wines. Their newly released 2024 Pinot Gris, crafted by winemaker Stacey Horniman, is crisp, vibrant, and pairs well with BC seafood. Blue Grouse isn't your mainland wine, but your island discovery. Visit the tasting room or explore their collection at bluegrouse.ca.
One of the best things about drinking wine today is that inexpensive wine has never been better. Helping you to improve your wine knowledge and find great buys in the marketplace has been a lifelong goal of mine because once you become a savvy shopper, you can influence retailers to start selling better wines at better prices. So learning just a little bit more about wine can improve the local selection in your neighborhood. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and I invite you to visit us at gismondionwine.com to become a savvy shopper and drink better wine.
This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Now, here's Anthony. I got you.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome back to the show. I'm speaking with Sandy Lyer. She's the winemaker at Laughingstock Vineyards, which this year at the 2025 Wine Align National Wine Awards was the best performing small winery of the year, which means just under 10,000 cases. You have to be under 10,000 cases to qualify for that. And you did, and you won it. We're going to talk about some of the wines. You had two platinums, we talked about them. You have three golds that you brought along today, and one which is new to me. I mean, I've been looking at it now for a while, but Market Bubble is a terrific new sparkling wine to add to the mix.
Thank you. Yeah, we're excited for this one.
Did you push for that, or like, was it just coming along? Or
I mean,
it's been aging, I guess, there.
Yeah,
for a while.
This was actually before my time, and so 2020 was the first vintage that Laughingstock did this sparkling, and so I got to be there for the disgorging of it, and that was in 2024, I guess, we disgorged, so three years on the lease. But yeah, it's an interesting blend. They had Pinot Noir Chardonnay and Pinot Meunier for the first vintage, and unfortunately we lost the Meunier contract later on, but we've continued to make it every year since 2020. So
this wine is not only is it delicious, it has the nose and the structure that I want in a sparkling wine. Like, it's just a lovely, inviting on the nose. Bit of brioche, a bit of all that lees and I like to sometimes call it like the early morning bakery smell, sort of, you know, when you walk by a bakery. Yeah, delicious wine.
Thank you.
I don't think you can make enough of this.
No, I know. Yeah. I think we need to make more in the future.
And I would suspect, like, I'd buy this wine and I wouldn't have any problem just leaving it in my cellar for 3 or 4 years anyways. Like, buy a few bottles and just watch it. But it's going to improve in the bottle even more with a little bit more time as it ages. It gets that sort of final nugget of complexity and a really delicious wine.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot of potential still for sure, but we're almost sold through on this vintage, so you got to get it quick. 21 vintage has just been released, and similar but without the Pinot Meunier.
So. Yeah, and like most wineries, so to buy your wines, is it best to go online at the winery website and buy direct? Is that
That's probably
the easiest way to get them?
Yes, or come to the tasting room. We don't distribute that widely to many retail stores, just simply because we don't make that much of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, wine club is also a good way to get it.
Yeah, it's a fun label, too. It has that sort of stock market thing going on, but all of a sudden the bubbles break off, the bright lights.
I know. I love the label for the sparkling. We weren't sure what to do because everything else has the painted bottles, but this one we had to do a paper label, so I think marketing did a great job with that.
I also like, for people who don't know, it's kind of an anomaly that you actually put the pick date on every wine bottle, which is fun, too. So if you look at older vintages and you see, wow, that was picked in September 2 years ago, and now it was picked at the end of October 3 years later sort of thing. It shows you how real winemaking is,
for sure,
wine growing.
How different it can be from year to year. But also, I don't think many people know, but that pick date also corresponds to the stock quotes that are on the bottles as well.
So, yeah, there you go. Yeah. I didn't know that.
No? So now you can look back at your 10-year-old portfolio.
Oh, boy. You see, I'm not much in finance. I'm more into drinking wine.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Okay, a couple more wines here. I'm talking with Sandy Lyon. We're talking about some of her award-winning wines, two gold medal winner wines now. You have the Pinot Noir in the portfolio. We'll start with the Pinot Noir. Pinot Noir is a difficult grape to grow. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult wine to make.
Yes.
What do you do to counter all that?
I think that, well, first of all, we have a fantastic viticulture team that does a great job growing these grapes. And so it's not, you know, I don't have to worry too much about the vineyard. They crop it really low for us, so we get some good intensity. And so I'm basically just checking on the fruit. And then when we pick it, obviously, the pick time is critical.
Yeah.
This fruit is grown in OK Falls at our Thomas Ranch Vineyard, and I think it's just a great little spot for it. Mm-hmm. It retains a lot of aromatics that I find kind of unique to Pinot Noir in BC. I don't get this particular type of aromatics in that many Pinots, and I think the terroir there, it's just so different. And so anyways, when we bring it in, we hand pick it, we destem it, but we keep mostly all whole berries in our fermenters. We're only doing little 1-ton ferments, about 6 of them. That's our capacity. And everything's hand punched down a couple times a day, and we get a lot of extraction that way.
Wow. It's interesting because it's such a dark bottle. It looks like it's a dark Pinot.
Yes.
It's a very light Pinot.
It is pretty light.
It's pretty light and very aromatic, as you said, power suggestion. But yeah, it is. I don't know what it is about. What I love about the source of this wine is that it tells you that Pinot Noir should be grown in Okanagan Falls.
I think so, too.
Well, I don't know what's so special about that spot yet. I haven't quite figured that out, but it seems like there's a lot of good Pinot coming out of there.
I think it's a great spot. It's just the right temperature in there. It's not too far north. It's not too south.
Really nice. I can see, you know, it's not hard now looking back to see why these wines would score a gold medal. And most of them, it's all about the balance, because that's the most difficult thing is to get the balance. But once you have it, it just makes a wine stand apart from so many other wines. It's the kind of thing that I have desperate to help consumers find a way to understand balance in wine, because once you do, you know, you can really have fun with wine.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, a balanced wine lives forever.
Yes.
That's the best thing about it.
I think that we're getting better in the Okanagan with our ageability and finding the balance in our wines. So
Delicious. I'm going to love that wine. I haven't. That's the first time I've had a chance to taste it. It really is impressive.
Oh, thank you.
And at 14.2%, you don't even feel it either. I don't know. Are you always right on, or are you one less, one more?
No, it's pretty close. I don't mess around too much because, I don't know, I don't want to be too far off from the label. I don't really like the idea of falsifying that.
Way to go.
Thank you.
Okay, portfolio. A lot of people know portfolio. It's been around for a while. It was David Enns was really pushing that wine at the beginning. It was a wine that he really wanted to make, particularly in the Bordeaux style. And I'm thinking that now, you know, way down the road, that maybe we can stop saying Bordeaux and just say the Okanagan style, because it's a completely different ball game here.
Yes.
Especially with the savoriness. Anyway, tell us a bit about portfolio and how how it unfolds for you. Is it an early thing in the vineyard, or is it a late thing that when it comes together?
I think so. For the portfolio, we're identifying the blocks early on that are going to perform for us for the year.
Yeah.
And once we got those identified and we're, you know, cropping to the level that we want it at,
right.
I usually let the fruit hang pretty long out there. I'm trying to get like the best phenolic ripeness and a lot of flavor development in this fruit. So we're picking pretty late in 2022. The Petit Verdot for this came in well after the snow fell.
Yeah. It's super late. It's always super late, but
22 was a late year, and that was a bit of a, I mean, it was a tough year bringing stuff in, you know, picking in the snow and that kind of thing, but it was worth it because it was delicious once it came in, and worth the extra effort for sure.
Have you had a chance to taste some of the older ones now that you're at the winery?
Yeah. Or? Yes, I have.
Yeah. So how would you, first of all, has it changed a lot, the actual, the general blend? Like, has it gone from one to a different?
Not a lot. No, it's typically been Merlot dominant, so close to 50% Merlot. But there was one vintage the other. So a couple nights ago, we did a winemaker's dinner, and it was our 20th anniversary of portfolio. So we did a 4-year vertical of portfolio at the dinner, and we did a 2013, a 16, a 19, and a 22, and they're all, you know, you can see the progression of them. Only one of them was cab dominant. The rest were all almost the same composition as the 22, which is about 49% Merlot, say 30% Cab Sauv, 10 Cab Franc, and then the rest is just a little Malbec and Petit Verdot. But the 13 was spectacular, and that really, like, it just blew me away that it's...
I love that vintage.
Yeah.
Especially with a Merlot-dominant red blend from BC in 2013. I still have many of them, and they're delicious.
It's
They've
amazing.
Really gone along well.
Yeah. So they were all very good. 16 was great as well. But the 22 definitely had that extra pop of fruit, just being a younger wine, and I'm excited to see how it's going to age out over time.
I like these wines a lot, and I mentioned it earlier. Like, I think we have our own style now, and I also think we have this, as you know, this sort of savory sort of thing going on when those temperatures rise in the south in the summer, and you get that the oils and the wildness coming out of the sagebrush and the, basically all the desert brush. That little complexity in the wine really changes it. Like, for me, it takes me more to Bulgari, as I often say, and even up into the Uco Valley in Argentina, where they have these two characters in their wine, and they're so sophisticated and so different than Bordeaux. Mm-hmm. Bordeaux has its own, you know, stream of flavors, but Bordeaux is kind of a more sleek, more sophisticated style, and this is just slightly on the other side of that with the savoriness, more umami almost. Like, it's got a little bit of umami that Bordeaux doesn't. I guess that's
for
the best
sure.
way I could say it.
Yeah, no, that's so true.
I
a little
love
rugged.
It. Yeah. Okay, what about Laughingstock? Can people come and see you, meet you, taste with you, or how busy are you, or how does it work there? Do you need rezos, or what's the game?
It's a good idea to make a reservation just because it's such a small little parking lot and a small tasting room, but we do leave the gate open. We have a sign saying just come on up and, you know, we should be able to fit you in. I'm always around there, so if you do want to meet me and come into the winery, I'm all more than happy for people to come up and say hello.
It's a nice compact winery too. You can see a lot of it from a couple of vantage points.
So. Yeah, and if you do come up during harvest, you'll see us harvesting out on the crush pad right by the tasting room. So it's kind of fun to see.
Yeah, and are you happy about this year? Looking, what do you think about?
Yes,
25.
I think it's going to be a great, great harvest this year. We've got more fruit than we thought we were going to have, so that's a good thing. And we're pretty much getting a little bit of everything, so we're going to be replenishing, you know, basically everything that we didn't get in 24. So
right,
it's good.
Right. So you're going to have more of a full profile next year
for
people to enjoy.
Definitely, yeah.
Sandy, so great to catch up with you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, listen, congratulations. Like, honestly, I know that I'm involved in those awards, but that's a big award. You should be super proud of your team and tell the whole world about it, man.
Thank you so much. Yeah, a shout out to my team. Caitlin Barrent was the assistant winemaker. She's on maternity leave, and Cohen Park, my cellar hand. So.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, thanks so much. We'll catch up with you soon.
Okay.
That was Sandy Lyer, winemaker at Laughingstock Vineyard. Never miss any of our conversations. And listen on your time with our podcast available wherever you go for your favorite podcasts.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
I'm Anthony Gismondi with 2 minutes in the tasting room with Jesse Harnden. He's the general manager of Mount Boucherie Winery in West Kelowna. Jesse, all the doom and gloom about the freeze, the replant, whatever, but there's good news coming out of that.
Yeah, no, I think you always got to be optimistic, and I could go on and on about the doom and gloom of the fire and ice and brimstone of the last 2 years, but I also feel really strongly that this is a really exciting moment in the evolution of BC wine, just as the Becker project was, or the free trade agreement was, or the real influx of vinifera was in the late 90s, I think this is a big moment for us to look beyond, the varietals we might have planted in the past, and looking outside maybe the French grape varietal box. And to me, it's really exciting to think, 3 years forward and seeing people planting things like Barbera or Sangiovese or Albarino, and just not the typical Chard, Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Gris that's really dominated this market for, as far as I can remember.
And also, I would suggest capitalizing on all of the knowledge that people have amassed in the last 20 or 30 years, what they did right, what they did wrong, and, what could be different.
Exactly. I remember we talked about this maybe 10 years ago, where it's like, okay, maybe, Cab Sauv shouldn't be in the north, and Pinot Blanc shouldn't be in the south.
Yep.
Instead, we're just looking at what overall can handle the Okanagan climate, in its hot and cold moments. Yeah.
And your impression is that consumers are ready for that too? Or they're wanting it? Or are we going to have to start all over with them too?
I mean, every time you just follow consumer trends, I think you're already behind the eight ball. And we go a little above the eight ball, sometimes too far, but that's what you got to do to keep this exciting.
And here at Mount Boucherie, then, what is one thing that will change here as a result of all this?
Well, we're staying loyal to the Blaufränkisch, as you can imagine, but we're also going to play around with things like Mondeuse, and as I mentioned, Albarino, and maybe a little Sangiovese, and who knows what else. But really excited to try some new stuff.
I'm Anthony Gismondi, and that was 2 minutes in the tasting room.
At Blue Grouse Winery, every bottle tells the story of Vancouver Island's unique terroir. Rooted in Cowichan Valley's volcanic soils and ocean breezes, Blue Grouse is celebrated for creating distinctive regional wines. Their newly released 2024 Pinot Gris, crafted by winemaker Stacey Horniman, is crisp, vibrant, and pairs well with BC seafood. Blue Grouse isn't your mainland wine, but your island discovery. Visit the tasting room or explore their collection at bluegrouse.ca.
Now, back to BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy, but here's my number, so call me.
Hello, British Columbia. We're delighted to welcome our neighbors who are only a half a block away, just down the road, through the alley, actually, the iconic Fairmont Hotel Vancouver to the show. Our guests are Chris Robinson. He's the director of food and beverage, and Darcy Hagen is the director of weddings and luxury events. That's the kind of job I'd like to have. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Summer's gone. Fall is here. Things change quickly in the hotel, but you've probably been planning for the fall since the spring.
Yeah, absolutely. We start very early to get all the moving parts in motion.
Yeah. So Haunted Cellar afternoon tea. What's that all about?
Well, spooky season is upon the Fairmont Hotel Vancouver. So it's our fourth afternoon tea theme of the year.
Yeah.
Super excited. And we've dug in our hotel's history, our ghosts and our past and our haunted stories. And we've come up with a wonderful theme to correspond with the month of October and Halloween. The culinary team has done an outstanding job with some incredible desserts, including the Midnight Burial Chocolate Mousse and the Bewitched Caramel Pecan Cupcake, along with some great teas and cocktails and wine to pair with that. So
yeah,
great offering. It's going live. It's live already and going until November 9th.
When is tea time?
11 a.m., 1 p.m., and 3 p.m., three seatings a day.
Okay. And when you have a seating, how long can you stay or linger, or how does that work, or do you have to throw people out at some point?
We encourage them at the end, but an hour and 45 minutes is the average time for a seating.
Yeah. And it's busy.
Oh, yes.
Like, so, you got to get a rezo for that.
Oh, definitely. So it sells out pretty quickly, especially on the weekends.
Okay. And so you both adults and children can be there?
Yep,
yep. And they'll find something to entertain them as well?
Yeah, the theme is not too scary to discourage children, so everyone's welcome.
Okay. And Jinx, the Spook Speakeasy, what is that all about?
So we are excited for another pop-up speakeasy located on our lower lobby. And so we wanted to do a more elevated spooky. We didn't want the classic pumpkins and whatnot. So for Jinx, we're diving into kind of more of an old world apothecary. So think of like witches and potions and greenery and all that good stuff kind of coming to life between the menu and then some amazing elixirs, aka mm-hmm. cocktails, mm-hmm. that we have created that will really kind of go into the theme. And you'll walk in and feel like you're in another world down there.
You feel like people have to be entertained all the time now? Or like it's interesting how these events evolve from, you know, years ago, I would say.
Yeah, I think with the new themes, like typically our speakeasy themes, we do three different ones a year. Mm-hmm. And so keeping it fresh, keeping it new, some new decor goes in every time. We put a lot of thought into kind of the decor and what the room will look like as
right.
well. And to give it that very kind of inspiring, Instagrammable look and feel for when guests come as well. And I think it just keeps it new. It keeps people coming back. And it's something that it's like, oh, we haven't seen that one before. Let's go. So you check out what that space is going to look like. What are we going to find, not only from different cocktails, but to what the room's going to look like itself?
Darcy, you're all over the hotels. Where are these ghosts anyways? Like, what are the stories about these ghosts?
Well...
do you see them up there when you're wandering around?
I personally have not seen them in my 13 years at the hotel,
yeah.
but there is rumors of a lady in red roaming our 14th floor.
Wow.
But... It's hard to say if I haven't seen them myself. But
what would you do if you saw a lady in red on the 14th floor? Man, I'd be in the elevator before.
She's
you
a very
knew
friendly
it.
Ghost.
Oh,
she
yeah?
is, yes, yes, a very, very, very friendly ghost. And Hotel Vancouver was her favorite place back in the 1930s.
Yeah.
So she resides apparently at the hotel
somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Our guests are Chris Robinson. He's the director of food and beverage, and Darcy Hagen is the director of weddings and luxury events at the Fairmont Hotel Vancouver. Castle Confidential. Now, I'm interested in this. This is a two-night affair. Is that right? Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So last year we did it just for one night, and it was so popular, sold out almost instantaneously, that for this year we wanted to open that up for two nights.
Oh, you don't go for two nights. It's available for two
exactly,
nights.
Exactly.
I thought, wow,
yeah.
it must be a pretty confidential thing.
Very immersive.
Okay, now I get it. Right.
Yeah,
what is it all about?
You can choose to come one of the two nights.
Yeah, and we're back on the 14th.
We're back on the 14th floor where all the spookiness happens.
Yeah.
So Castle Confidential is an interactive mystery experience on our iconic 14th floor. So basically that floor is where all of our specialty suites are located. So
mm-hmm.
guests will be able to engage with different characters. We team up with Vancouver Mysteries that actually write a personalized kind of mystery just for the hotel. So they really tie in a lot of details of the history of the hotel, some characters. You may even see the lady in red if you come by. And so when guests come, they uncover hidden clues. They are, trying to complete tasks and all alongside enjoying some cocktails and some nibbles as well. And then this year we have also are working with Vancouver Mysteries to create a new story. So even though if guests came last year, you'll mm-hmm. get a whole new story and mystery and new characters that you're trying to kind of unlock and discover as you go through the mystery.
Mm. And can I get a drink while I'm up there? Or how does that work?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we have, it's 90 minutes long, and during that time you get three themed drinks, as well as some gourmet canapes, and then there is a post-experience reception, so you're able to head up to our rooftop space on the 15th floor afterwards to continue the party into the reception, and then we are encouraging guests to dress from the theme of the era that we are going with for the mysteries, which
yeah.
is for the 1920s.
Oh, the 20s.
Mm-hmm. So just pre-opening of the hotel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What should I wear if I'm coming from the 20s then?
I mean, for ladies, the flapper yeah. era is very right. popular during that. And gentlemen, you know, a good hat.
A hat, yeah.
Bow tie.
Old school
yeah.
suit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Three-piece suit.
The pre-recession look.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love it. So this is on Friday, October 24th and Saturday, October 25th. And how do people get tickets or how does that work?
So tickets are available online. They are $150 per person. That includes all of your cocktails, canapes, and then the 90-minute mystery experience.
Okay, there you go. Well, it's also Thanksgiving now, and that means turkey. And turkey to go is, you know, it's relatively new, but not that new. But I think more and more people are getting into it. What's happening at the Hotel Van? What are you offering?
So we have an option that we cook everything for you, for your family, everything from the turkey.
Okay, I'm in.
All the trimmings, all the desserts, the sides, and you come and pick it up and you take it home. You just have to heat everything up. There's cooking instructions, everything there for you. So just to take the little pressure off for the family gathering for Thanksgiving. So we do have two options available for it. So there's one that feeds 8 to 10 people, and that's right. $475. And there's one for 4 to 5 guests, and that is $315.
Yeah. And people celebrate, you know, Saturday, Sunday, sort of Monday. How does that work? Can they pick it up on, are there restrictions about when they can get it? Or
yeah, so we're offering it on Sunday, October 12th.
Right.
And the ordering deadline is October 9th. So it gives the culinary team enough time to prepare everything. So the entire banquet kitchen in Hotel Vancouver is full turkey all weekend.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds good. And you, how do you do that? You phone the front desk or, I don't know, go online? I guess most people do that.
Yeah, you can go to the Fairmont Hotel Vancouver website and there'll be a link there available to yeah. direct you there. And then you can order all online, put your credit card and any special requirements, and we can we receive that. And then we send the confirmation email as well and pick up instructions and cooking
right.
instructions.
And if I want to come in and eat at Thanksgiving, you've got a brunch going on, do you not? At
of course,
Notch 8 or?
Of course we do, our famous Sunday brunch. So for Thanksgiving. So that is happening October 11th and 12th mm-hmm. With seatings at 11:15 and 1:30. It's $95 per adult, $49 for children.
Nice.
And we set up an extravagant buffet in the lobby area, and it continues through the restaurant. And it's just a great offering as well if you don't want to cook at home.
Right. And dinner? I can do dinner as well, I believe.
Yes, we do have
we might as well get it all in. We love turkey, you know?
We do love turkey at the Hotel Vancouver. We do have a 3-course dinner that is available October 11th through 13th yeah. From 5 to 10 p.m. And it's $79 per adult and $40 for children. Wow. And we do offer the same special on American Thanksgiving for our American friends.
Right. That sounds like a better deal than actually going out and buying it and cooking it and going through all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Okay, folks, don't panic. You can get all this information. There's an events calendar for the Fairmont Hotel Vancouver. People can go to that website and actually slowly read what we've been talking about quickly here for the last few minutes. It should be a busy month.
Yes, it is.
And then it's Christmas.
Oh my God, yeah.
So there's no time off.
We've already got all the Christmas offerings pretty much live and online. So yeah. as soon as we opened up reservations for Christmas Day brunch, we had 50 people just book immediately. So
wow.
It's a high demand season.
Yeah. It's been a great year for the Hotel Van.
Yes, it has.
Yeah, yeah, lots of exciting stuff.
Sounds like it's going to go out with a bang.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for just walking across the street. Very happy to have you here in the studio.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
You. That was Chris Robinson. He's the director of food and beverage, and Darcy Hagen is the director of weddings and luxury events at the Fairmont Hotel Vancouver. Of course, Vancouver's iconic hotel right downtown. That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. If you missed any part of the show, it's available on all the major podcast platforms. Special thanks to our technical producer in Vancouver, Dwayne Bishop, director of operations, Stu Ferguson, and for all of us at the show, I'm Anthony Gismondi. I wish you a great week ahead and an even better glass of wine.
That's it for today's show. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.